Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to the February edition of The Podyssey. Love is in the air. This week we're talking about romance and all things romantic. It is February, it's Valentine's Day, there's some romantic films coming up. I'm here with the three loves of my life, Roberto, Sam and Nick. Say hello, fellas.
Hello, hello.
How's everybody doing? This is a hastily started pod because there was some horrendous traffic on the way here. So we have really rattled through this start, but we're in here now. We're calm. How's everyone doing? Nick, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Working hard at the Odyssey. I am making my way through sort of the nominated films, trying to catch up on them before I know the BAFTAs is coming up, but the Oscars. I don't know why, but the Oscars still feels more prestigious.
I agree.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason. But I don't know who says so, but there you are.
Isn't that weird? Like, so I was Googling in the week, because I'm busy like this, how many Oscars has Tom Cruise won? Turns out none, apart from a weird Lifetime one. Okay. Should matter. For some reason, I was really annoyed about that fact, which means I obviously do somehow rate the Oscars a little bit.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's like, I usually go with that mindset of like, look, it doesn't matter if these films don't get nominated for Oscars or they don't win Oscars, you know, it's like the Oscars is not the end all be all of all film criticism. It's just like, you know, a very Americanized idea of like prestige cinema. But then, you know, a film I will be mentioning later on that we're showing at the Odyssey next month was not nominated even for like foreign film Oscar. And I was like, they're trying to annoy me.
Do you know what I find weird about the Oscars? And this is just me being weird. I find if a film's nominated or even wins an Oscar, doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to rate it. If an actor or director wins an Oscar, I'm really impressed. So weirdly, I'm more impressed if a person wins an Oscar than I am if a film wins an Oscar.
That's true.
I think it's because that's more of like a film wins an Oscar, it's like a camp of people. But if you're an actor or an actress, that's purely based, I suppose, more on their talent versus what anyone else might say.
Yeah.
It's probably a lot easier to like think of a performance, an individual performance in a film as being better than others rather than one film is the best film of all films.
Because
that's very hard to quantify. And it always feels like, as much as people can agree, like, oh, One Battle After Another should win Best Picture, there's still going to be loads of people that think, oh, Hamlet should win and Jesse Buckley's the best performance of the year.
Yeah. There's also been an interesting, recently, there's rightly been a swing to much more diverse in the Oscars because it was, it was bad for a long time.
Yeah.
That's prompted a bit of a panicky mad scramble, which means you don't know if all the winners recently have been legitimately the best or if they've been kind of tried to retrofit in a bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Definitely. So, that's been quite interesting.
You know, Oscars don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure I heard the other day that Oscars is 100 in 2 years' time.
Oh, really?
The awards ceremony is 100 years old.
Well, I'm sure they'll be pretty quiet and understated about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll know when it's the 100th. Yeah, Oscar. I think it's like 90... something at the moment, I think.
Yeah, so no, close to it.
Yeah,
that's a good innings. Right, so we're going to be talking about all things romance and romantic films shortly. We've also had a watch along. Mm-hmm. We all watched When Harry Met Sally in memory of the very sad incidents around Rob Reiner, but also because it is an all-time classic romantic film.
Definitely.
But first, what has happened at the Odyssey? And what are you guys looking forward to in the next few weeks?
Lots of Hamlet has happened. Yes. We've had many Hamlet showings, which are selling out all across the board. And I haven't seen it yet. And I keep having to like project, like turn on the projector, turn on the film, and then just like hide my eyes from the from the screen because I can't. I don't want to get the emotion as you guys were talking about in this film. Apparently, is very emotionally raw, and I don't want to get that like ruined for me. So I've been like doing a lot of ducking around for Marty Supreme as well, actually.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen Marty Supreme yet?
Yes.
Oh, what's it like?
Really good. Really, really good fun. Yeah. It's kind of a non-stop roller coaster where just the most outrageous stuff happens scene for scene for scene.
Oh, lovely.
It's great.
I found it quite an original sort of movie. And Timothée Chalamet puts in probably the best acting maybe in his whole career. Mm. And I've saying along the side of what how we introed, I'm sort of watching a few other movies. Well, I know that one coming up anyway is The Voice of Hind Rajab, which is nominated in film, not in the English language category. Very gut punch, true story about like recovering a Palestinian child in the midst of like a war zone. I feel like I've turned this podcast on its head now, but I don't know. I really can't say much on it except like go see it. We have that on the 9th of February, hoping that this will be out before then. So the 9th of February at 7:30. If you haven't got a ticket for it, it's one to watch 100%.
Yeah, I'm going to try and come watch that if I can. Mm-hmm. Looks really devastating, but definitely very important to watch, I think.
Right, chap. So it is, of course, Valentine's month. What romantic stuff have we got coming up?
Well, on Valentine's Day itself, we've got a double bill of The Princess Bride and Breakfast at Tiffany's.
So lovely.
Big, lovely romantic classics. And The Princess Bride, of course, also directed by Rob Reiner. Which is another
great
romantic classic. Yeah,
I've been a while since I've seen Princess Bride. I unfortunately can't make that show, I don't think, but I would love to because it's just such a... I think the thing with Princess Bride, it's so like mythologized now, but when you watch it, it's actually just like a really cozy, wholesome comedy with like a lot of swashbuckle. And I think that's like a very rare film you get nowadays. It feels like every film is trying to be like the biggest thing ever, like even films inspired by The Princess Bride, but it's just such a confident little...
Virtually like adventure films feel a bit extinct.
They do. But, yeah, that's true.
Such a rare group nowadays.
Although like subversive in some way, you don't get the true versus energy, you know.
Right.
controversially, never seen it.
It's good.
Never seen it. I might have to pop along on Valentine's Day.
Oh, I should, yeah.
See if
I'll be on 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
And then Breakfast at Tiffany's at 7. I've never seen Breakfast at Tiffany's.
It's a great film. I actually saw that on one of my first dates ever.
Oh,
18.
So nice. Yeah. Setting the mood. Lovely.
It was lovely. It is a really good film. Yeah, it's a very fitting, if you would like a romantic evening out, I would recommend coming to the Odyssey for that.
Fair play. That's a good first date.
Yeah, it was great.
The film was more memorable than the date.
Well, yes. Well, I did have a lot of drinks as well at the time, so... Can't quite remember everything about it, but I had a good time.
Well, you've got to calm those nerves somehow.
Well, exactly.
Right, so I'll tell you what. We will take a quick break there, and then we will come back and discuss. I'll tell you what, we'll have a talk about our watch-along. We want to watch along of When Harry Met Sally, so we'll come back and we'll talk about that. I also want to give a shout-out. I was looking at some of the stats around the Podyssey in the past month. We have a few American listeners.
No way.
Hello.
Not many, but a few. So if you're listening in America, first of all, hello. Second of all, please drop us a line because I am absolutely fascinated to be honest. Just drop the lads a line on the Odyssey Instagram or something. Let us know why on earth you're listening and how you find it because I find that amazing to hear that you're listening in the States, but you are very, very welcome and we're glad to have you. So... After this, we'll have our When Harry Met Sally watch along. Okay, welcome back to part two of the February Podyssey. Because it's February, we're talking all things love and romance. We're going to be turning our attention to romantic films in a minute. But starting in honour of that, we all had a watch along of, I think, what's widely considered a classic. We all watched When Harry Met Sally ahead of this podcast. I think most people would be familiar with this, but just in case you're not, Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal meet when they're very young. They don't get on. And almost kind of boyhood style, it keeps revisiting them like every 5-10 years or so to see how their relationship develops. With hilarious results. It's kind of a classic genre. It was made by the late Rob Reiner as well. What did people make of this? I enjoyed it. I thought Billy Crystal was quite annoying. if I can say that, but I did enjoy it. So what do we make of this? Sam, let's start with you.
I do think it's a lovely, lovely film.
It is.
And yeah, really nice to revisit. I think I saw it maybe 10 years ago, and I made a terrible mistake of watching it with my entire family. Which is not...
Yeah, because it's quite adult, right?
It's actually pretty raunchy stuff. It is. Or it's not like, you know, you don't see anything crazy.
No, I agree, but it's kind of...
You know, there's a lot... I mean, they're talking very openly about making love, etc.
Yeah.
Which for me, when I was 15 or so, sat next to my mom, wasn't great.
Never ideal.
But I still loved it.
I misremembered that because it's almost a kind of... You know, like in the Woody Allen films, there's a lot of like kind of very rapid fire chat about sex and death and all that.
Yeah.
It had a lot of that going on. It was more, like I say, more adult-y and a bit more cynical than I remembered, maybe.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I think they're quite realistic, in quotation marks, about relationships.
Yeah.
Not quite sugar-coated in the way that a lot of other like rom-coms are.
That was something I actually found. So I'd never seen it before. And I enjoyed that quote-unquote realistic side of it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I reckon I would have felt differently maybe watching it even like 5 years ago or as a teenager than I do now as an adult sort of like single, you know, guy trying to find his way through a dating life. And hearing also from friends that are, you know, going through, you know, got friends who are single, friends who are going, who like want to get married and have troubles and sort of things that like resonated at least a little bit with me. However, the, you know, I think the Americanization of all that is sometimes a bit too far. I've just thought, maybe not even in a bad way, but Carrie Fisher, with like when she pulled out the Rolodex of like single men, just like, oh wow, so here's what Hinge was then, like, or yeah. Like Tinder out, like,
yeah. And that's right, a young Carrie Fisher or youngish Carrie Fisher in there. That's
really interesting. Yeah, lovely to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's quite realistic, as in, you know, compared to like, say, a Matthew McConaughey getting together with Kate Hudson and they meet under some fireworks type thing. It's quite like warts and all, like,
it's not
easy this and it's not perfect.
Exactly. I think that's a good thing to bring up. It's like, it's like not easy. And, you know, I suppose maybe just time, like how time works with relationships anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just like, you know, and also I think maybe that was a sort of movie back then where to say like, oh, it's not just love at first sight, it's lots of ways to love.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And Meg Ryan is like unreal good in this. She's so charming. Like, I guess must be one of her earliest ones. And she's just so watchable. She's amazing in this. Roberto, what do you make of it?
Yeah, so this is also my first time watching it. And it's funny, so you bring up Billy Crystal, who I don't think I could ever truly find him annoying because he is my one true love, Mike Wazowski in Monsters, Inc.
Yes, he is.
This is the funny thing. I went to Sam this morning and I was like, I think we'd have to bring up on the podcast. I didn't like hearing Mike Wazowski say all those lecherous things. And Sam was like,
yeah,
that's Mike Wazowski. And I was like, yeah.
That was news to me. I never clocked.
I've watched a lot of Monsters, Inc., as you can imagine. You're absolutely right. That's Mike Wazowski. Yeah.
That Monsters, Inc. is just one of those films that's like burned into my brain. So for me, John Goodman and Billy Crystal will always be associated with Mike and Sully before like literally anything else. But so as a result, I did quite enjoy. I mean, obviously his character is supposed to be like the most flawed of the two, because obviously, like you guys mentioned, I really liked that whole revisiting like the time skips in the first half of the film. I've got like a weakness for when films do that anyway. I think it makes a film feel much more like grand and mythologized or something. Seeing their
timeless.
Seeing them change, like, not too drastically, but not, like, too subtly over the time. Like, especially that part where he comes up to her in the bookstore. And he's clearly, like, a much more humbled...
Yeah, quite narrowed by his experience.
Exactly, yeah. I found that really interesting. I just found the film, like I mentioned, Princess Bride being, like, very cozy and entertaining. This was, like, the exact same thing to me. I watched it, like, last night, like, in my bed... blankets over, so like that scene where they were like talking to each other, it's like, this is lovely. I really enjoyed it, both very charismatic performances for me as well.
And you know, to get a bit filmy about it, not to nip your guys' thunder, but you can really see
how it's influenced other ones. So, like, the soundtrack is basically, you know, like Four Winds and a Fury or something. You know, that kind of, like, it's all kind of wrapped up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the tunes were even the same, I noticed. So there's obviously, like, some things that people have started to borrow from that film.
I think that's so to be more filming, I think that's a Nora Ephron thing. So yeah. Nora Ephron wrote the script or the premise, and she has dabbled in a lot of romantic comedies. One of the films I'm actually going to bring up later as well. I might as well just say, like, You Got Mail, which is also another Meg Ryan star as well. Yeah, yeah. And it always has that. I think that's more of a way of, like, so what's the main soundtrack? Is that
that guy
Harry Connick Jr. is like talking about the
computer. But if there's like one overarching song that like just keeps going through somewhere, it's like Love Was Made for Me and You.
Yeah,
like
that. It's the What a Wonderful World guy, isn't it? Is that guy?
Yeah, Louis Armstrong. Yeah. I know exactly the song you
mean. But that sort of, I feel like that's just that particular style.
Yeah.
Specifically in this movie, I think because of Nora Ephron, she's, you know, done so many romantic comedies throughout the life that was like the formula of like, this is what I've done and I'm going to stick to it because it's successful.
Yeah, yeah.
And turned into a really great movie. We even love that.
But it's good, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I do actually want to bring up, I was going to mention Nora Ephron because I did want to bring it. While I was watching it, I was thinking, is this written by a guy or is it written by a girl? Because I nearly brought this up on the Christmas podcast. But like, when you watch a rom-com written by a dude and then a rom-com written not by a dude, there's a very clear difference in that the male fantasy, as you often see, is very attractive woman, and then the guy kind of just is kind of a bad dude and still somehow ends up with her.
Hmm.
Whereas when you watch rom-coms written by women, largely I find, like The Holiday, for example, it's often, sometimes the main love interest isn't even like conventionally attractive. Like, I wouldn't call Billy Crystal conventionally attractive, but there's just much more of it. The fantasy is, what if a guy was nice? What if a guy started off as a bad dude, but then became a nice dude?
What if he could have a conscience at the end of the film?
Which I always find interesting. And obviously there's like lots of touches that you wouldn't get from a male writer, particularly I think the cafe scene, which I'm not gonna lie, did make me like, I wasn't even watching this with anyone,
but I had the volume down.
I was like kind of squirming in my seat, which I guess is the point of the scene. But just public.
Hey,
situations.
If you try and get a spot in the Cat's Diner, you will not be able to. They literally got a sign over the table going, this is where Meg Ryan sat.
Too.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that scene is amazing. Like, everyone remembers it. It's kind of...
It's so good.
Yeah, it is good. But yeah, good film, I thought. Really good. Really enjoyed it.
Very good.
Also, life's funny, isn't it? I've never lived in New York in the 80s, but it made me quite nostalgic for like that kind of time. You know, like... Because you've seen so many films, it's kind of quite familiar. You know, when they're jumping out of cabs in the rain and stuff.
Mm. I think also because they cover all seasons, don't they? So you see them walking through the red leaves.
Yeah.
You've got snow picking up at the trees and then going through, like, you know, sunsets over New York in the arch and stuff like that. I think that I find that very nostalgic as well. Like, I always fall in love a bit more when I know that it's, like, set in New York at a certain time.
Yeah.
Just because. I don't know. It just makes you feel nostalgic.
But, yeah. Good effort. Enjoy it. Really enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely would easily pop that on again.
Yeah, yeah. Thumbs up from everyone. I like that. All right, we'll take a quick break. Then we're going to come back and talk all things romantic film. Okay, welcome to part three, I think, of the Podyssey. We're talking about all things romance and romantic films because it is February. It's Valentine's Day coming up. Just talked about When Harry Met Sally. Romantic films, they never seem to stop, do they? I think I'm a fan of the genre overall. I'll be interested to hear what you boys think are your favourites. But also, specifically talking about romantic comedies, there's a couple of tropes I wanted to run past you that I think I've spotted, right? One is, quite often, two people have to get together because one of them's made a bet or a dare or a challenge or something, and then they get together and actually they like each other, but then the other one finds out and he's like, I can't believe you made a bet or a challenge or whatever. That happens a lot. And the other one is, I mean, this is so far-fetched because I've never known this happen in real life, but you know when two people have to pretend to be a couple for whatever reason, to get a promotion or to win a pride, or and they hate each other,
happen over time. So like Picture Perfect, What Happened in Vegas, I thought of The Proposal, Anyone But You, Pretty Woman, all films they have to pretend to be a couple, mm-hmm. and they sort of hate each other. Right, that was my little noticing of tropes, which is a rare thing. What we said about romantic films, Nicholas, fan, not fan, and which ones do you like of some?
I mean, I enjoy some of them. Like, the tropes, I don't know. Like, I feel like they're just, like, essentially setups for, you know, easy setups.
Yeah.
To make to make the story sort of flow. I haven't got on my list with me, but I think last year I brought up around similar things. I want to say La La Land is a great romantic movie. Yeah, perfect. And I also just think that's to do with more like the setting of LA and the sun-soaked streets and the musical moments in there, the setting a sort of energy of like love and kinship from among others as well.
And really realistic because they don't end up together, but it's all kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's sort of... Like, it's not happy, but you do sort of feel like that's the way it has to roll at the end, you know?
Yeah,
they're not
together.
God's Own Country, I think I also brought that up last year.
I really need to watch that. Like,
Josh O'Connor.
Right?
Yeah. He's on a roll. He's on a roll right now. But yeah, that's a sort of same-sex relationship between Josh O'Connor, who's a farmer, and then a migrant who comes to work on his farm, and they sort of fall in love quite raw. Like, nothing's really ever said, but it's just the energy they have towards each other.
This is quite lazy for me, but is it a bit like Brokeback Mountain? You know, the kind of... you know what I mean? That was the famous...
Yeah.
Yes and no.
It's been back in the day.
I suppose, because it also ends quite abruptly for them. But then I feel like there's more of a... relationship there than there is in Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah,
but as much as they could give away anyway, for the time's sake, you know, historical context. But then if you're talking like cheesy rom coms, so I really like The Wedding Singer.
Oh, I love The Wedding Singer.
Right, with Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore.
It's really 80s.
Oh yeah. You know, I don't know. There's like parts in it which I really love. I think that's more of a nostalgic thing for me as well. Like the little grandma singing hip hop, hippity hip at the end. And then also Billy Idol cameoing on the plane at the end, singing White Wedding, you know. It's just a laugh. Like, Steve Buscemi's in it as well. He's a right laugh. The Wedding Planner, I enjoy.
I like this one.
Jennifer Lopez.
There's a friend of ours who that is their favourite ever film. And when I told her I liked it, she was so pleased. I like that one. I like
is it Matthew McConaughey?
Lopez.
Yeah.
I think, so Jennifer Lopez is planning Matthew McConaughey's wedding to someone else?
Yeah. Planning the wedding for someone else. And then they just have an amicable or like horrible breakup. And then he's just like, well, you know, I've realised that you're sort of the one for me as well. And but also, he's like dashingly good looking in that movie too.
He's kind of the king of these, or was for a while.
Yeah.
He's in a few of these, and he's always so.
I think he did in the mid 2000s. Yeah. He was on
it. I think this came out in like 2000, I think, or 2001. And I would have more, but off the top of my head, I just can't think much more. But you guys definitely will have more, like written down anyway. So. You guys, what would you
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, thinking about this, and we also kind of we were talking about romance films that also didn't necessarily end all rosies and
kind of anti-romance. Somebody called our chat,
which there's quite a few of, and I do quite like a few, and I think like a tragic romance for me is always something. I don't know if I'm just masochistic, but there is like part of me that just likes to watch a film where there's kind of a. There's a strong yearning, but maybe it isn't ever like fully resolved, or maybe there's things hanging in the air. I think the king of that is, of course, Wong Kar-wai, who we actually played in The Mood for Love recently at the cinema, which is just pure. It's kind of like Brief Encounter, but even more painful than that film at times in terms of like you're like just get together for God's sake. But he's really great at just capturing that kind of feeling of like a magnetism between two people. But yeah, looking at this, I kind of realized. Romance is like quite a big part of like even just films that I don't necessarily aren't necessarily fully romantic films. in my like favorites, but like there's always a strong, there is a strong element of it in there. I think one of them I realized like is that that's in there. Well, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, of course.
I knew you were gonna
mention. I brought this up last year, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And then a film I rewatched recently that again I will bring up his newest film in the next segment, Decision to Leave by Park Chan-wook, the Korean film, which is set up as a detective film, but is actually very much just quite a strong love story. And quite like, in terms of capturing like the physical attraction between the two characters, it's like pulling some really good directorial tricks off to achieve that. And I'm just quite a sucker for a film that kind of throws, I guess, physical combat and like physical action with romance. There's a film I really like called First Love, which is a Japanese film, which is kind of like a Guy Ritchie film in Japan with these two like young will they, won't they couple in the middle trying to get out of it so they can perhaps proceed with a relationship at some point. But murders keep happening. But that's a really, I recommend that. It's on Prime at the moment.
Nice.
Phantom Thread's another one I want to bring up because I watched that very recently. Talking of Paul Thomas Anderson.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
It is. Yeah. I mean, very subversive romance. Not exactly the kind of romance you'd ever want to be in. But there's an interesting relationship between those two characters and how they kind of feed off each other's power, like wanting power, each of them. Daniel Day-Lewis and his muse, as it were, I suppose, never gets like really explicit, but like there's just this overhang of like, what is going on with these kids? There's something weird going on.
I know it's not quite the same, but have you ever seen the film Remains of the Day with Anthony Hopkins?
I'm reading the book.
Heard of it.
Are you?
I'm reading the book right now.
Genuinely, it's incredible. Anthony Hopkins is amazing. It's not like Phantom Threads, but it's kind of, he's basically this butler who's from an era where no one ever shows emotion, and he's in love with Emma Thompson's character, who's quite kind of vicious, and it's just, oh, it's such a beautiful film. And you're reading the book.
I'm reading the book, and like that's a perfect example of that, like, because you can tell there's something between the two characters, but she's constantly trying to get it out of him, and he's like, oh, I can't do this, I'm a butler.
Where he's kind of caught reading like a romance novel. He's just beyond devastated that he's been caught reading it, and it's just so sweet.
Read that bit in the book, and I was like, that's crazy. I'm gonna watch the film afterwards at some point, but a great romantic story with where that's kind of subtly implied but never like fully stated, because that's kind of the tragedy of the character, I suppose.
Lovely.
I think romance, whether it ends happily or ends tragically, is just a very potent thing in filmmaking,
part of the journey.
Exactly. What about you, Sat?
I feel like I have some complex feelings on the genre, especially like rom-coms as a whole, because I feel like, as you were saying, there are so many tropes, and generally you kind of know the narrative trajectory is almost always the same. And that's not even to say that it's a bad thing. It's always going to be, they'll meet at some point and they'll either get along straight away or they won't.
Yeah.
And then eventually they'll start to get along, and then in the like 3/4 along, they're going to break up or something is going to be revealed, and then they'll all walk alone and they'll be raining, and then eventually they'll realize, oh my God, we're in love, and then I'll run and meet in the airport.
Yeah,
or
like
whichever
Ryan Reynolds or Matthew McConaughey or Adam Sandler,
Owen Wilson,
or Sandra Bullock, or Owen Wilson, or Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah,
yeah, well, it's gonna happen at some point. Yeah.
But I don't know, because I'm not. I guess maybe there's an extent of oversaturation of that exact narrative playing beat for beat. So maybe I probably prefer films that try and subvert that. But then at the end of the day, When Harry Met Sally effectively is that plot, just they're not explicitly together for most of it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of still happening.
I guess that one's interesting because they really talk us through it. So the rest kind of show us it happening in almost like Fisher-Price steps. When Harry Met Sally, the two characters explain us through what they're feeling and what's happening to them, kind of thing.
Yeah, they're kind of like deconstructing it, but it's still happening in front of our eyes at the same time. It's interesting. In terms of my favourites, it's difficult. I love Before Sunrise and Before Sunset.
Very serious.
They're so lovely. There's a third Before Midnight. So each film is like set several years apart, and it's Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke. They meet on a train when they're like interrailing, when they're like 18 or 19 in Before Sunrise, the first one. And you just follow them over about 12 hours and you just watch them fall in love, and they never really say it out loud, but it is some remarkable filmmaking. The film's like 90 minutes max. But you, I don't know, is watching that is like watching a documentary. It feels like you're watching two people literally fall in love
in real time,
your eyes in real time.
Yeah.
And this kind of the most iconic scene where they're in a record shop and they're listening sharing a pair of headphones, listening to a song, and they're just like glancing at each other. It is really amazing to
watch. Is this Linklater or not?
It's Linklater.
I've been trying to watch the Before trilogy for ages, but I want to sit down and watch like all of them at once.
Yeah, it's very worthwhile. I still haven't seen the third one because I'm kind of putting it off because I don't want to know.
How it all ends.
But it's really, I think for me, that's the most evocative relationship I've seen unfold in film before.
Hey, Linklater, he does that thing, doesn't he, really well, where he loves to check in with people over time because life is long, right?
Yeah.
So in a kind of, you know, and I enjoy the daft ones, but McConaughey getting together with J-Lo or whatever, you watch it over a few months, ends up fine.
They're cozy.
At the end, we know they're together because they're walking a dog and they've got some shopping. But Linklater's really like, life is different to that, and he checks back in and checks back in, and you don't know how it's going to end.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
What I was thinking when I was thinking about these is, and like, this might be because of my own stage in life, because I've got a family and stuff like this, but I really like films that show all kinds of different kinds of love. And what I mean by that is, so you know, like You've Got Mail, somebody mentioned it earlier. That's really about Tom Hanks kind of falling back in love with his kid.
Mm.
And then I watched Jerry Maguire recently, which Jerry Maguire, not necessarily into a rom-com, but is kind of, it's got Renée Zellweger in it. But it's kind of like a love story between, you've seen Jerry Maguire.
Or hasn't.
I've not seen Jerry Maguire.
I haven't seen Jerry Maguire.
Oh, you criminal.
Show me the money.
Right, there's got to be a watch along soon. That's outrageous. Okay, so basically that is a love story between Tom Cruise character and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character. Mm-hmm. And Tom Cruise's character, and Renée Zellweger's son, and Renée Zellweger's sister, and like the whole.
I haven't seen it in ages, though.
Oh, right. I'm calling a watch along, Jerry Maguire.
When Tom Cruise's new movie comes out, we'll do a watch along with
Yeah.
Perfect. But yeah, I like when, I don't know, when it's not just the boy girl main characters. I like when you feel the love from the other parts of the film. But yeah. Anyone else, anything else to say on romantic films? I think we've dipped our toe in the water a bit.
Yeah, I've forgotten that I mentioned that You've Got Mail, because of Nora Ephron, you know. And also I just love looking at the AOL chat room vibe that's been going on with that, you know, the old stuff. Like, we're sending emails for the first time ever.
So excited with the emails.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you're actually waiting on Tinder for Tom Hanks to send an email to someone. Bit like We're Alive Now, really.
Yeah.
And I think I might have mentioned it last year, but Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist is something that I really, really love. Because when I was a teenager watching it, I was very much into like indie bands and trying to find new music and stuff. And again, set in New York. And the thing is, like, the premise is sort of like Michael Cera and, I've forgotten the lady's name. But they meet over a love of music and sort of have a whole night out in New York trying to find this secret gig that's about to happen at like 4 a.m. in the morning on a rooftop bar or whatever. Just really cutesy. I haven't watched it in a while, but as soon as we were talking about it, I was like, I definitely should have mentioned that.
I do like the kind of indie ones, you know, like 500 Days of Summer, where it's all like, it's a romantic comedy, but it's kind of a little bit quirky with like a cool soundtrack and all that. The only other thing I was going to mention before we move on is I quite like some of the ones that have been done a bit more recently featuring older people. Like, you know, there's one with Something's Gotta Give with Jack Nicholson.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that.
And there's one called It's Complicated with...
I think that's also Nora Ephron.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
And As Good As It Gets is another Jack Nicholson one. I
haven't seen that one.
And I think it's him and Keanu Reeves. But yeah, they're all kind of featuring like...
Yeah.
Older kind of... actors like Diane Keaton and this kind of stuff, but they're really, really good. I think they are Nora. I think all three of those might be Nora Ephron.
Potentially.
Yeah. But anyway, romantic films, I'm a fan. We need them. We don't really want much of a conclusion there, but...
we do need
them. Like, yeah. And you need romance in films generally.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is kind of essential.
And quite often it's the reason, like, so even films like Die Hard, for example, or something mad that are completely non-romance based, the driving force is often that, you know,
I love
it as a glue for a film, yeah. Right, we will be back to have a look at what is coming up. We've done what's coming up, haven't we, really? We'll have a look at what's coming up.
Yeah.
We'll have a look at what's coming up.
Just do it again.
Yeah, we'll do a few other things. And if you're American listeners, sorry for that confusion. Please don't judge us or stop listening. Okay, so let's have a little look at what's coming up. You can see on the Odyssey over the coming month. Chaps, what have we got to look out for? Roberto, let's start with you.
Okay, so I'm gonna start with a film I watched this week, and we're showing this Monday the 9th of March, 7:30. It's a Korean film called No Other Choice.
Of course.
It's directed by Park Chan-wook, who I just mentioned with A Decision to Leave, but he is most notorious / famous for directing Old Boy, the 2003 original, not the American remake, which I know you have seen, Neil. Still haunts me. Just thinking about Josh Brolin walking into that recreation of the hallway fight. So he's a very well regarded. He's probably the most well regarded Korean director next to Bong Joon-ho, but generally tends to be a lot meaner. He's quite misanthropic and quite cynical, whereas little Bong has a bit more of the hope core going on. But his new film is about a man who, as far as we know, has dedicated 25 years of his life to immense service to this paper company, this paper mill, and is then laid off all of a sudden. And in an attempt to get hired by another paper company, he realizes there's going to be competition. And he takes matters into his own very slippery hands. Okay, so it's not a clean job. Let's just say what he's doing. I can't. There is so much I could say about this film. It's easily my favorite of last year. The directing is incredible. Some of the camera movement is just so exhilarating. It stars Lee Byung-hun, who now is most known for being frontman in Squid Game. I don't know if you guys watch Squid Game, but he's always been in one of my favorite films. He's in one of my favorite films, called A Bittersweet Life, which is an amazing film, and he gives such an immense performance in that. And here he's doing essentially dark slapstick comedy. Like he is stumbling around and bumbling around in an attempt to do some incredibly horrible things in desperation. And it's one of those films where obviously the premise kind of betrays a lot of like what's great about it, or a lot of the social commentary of it. But when you go and see the film, there's also a lot more under the surface, and particularly how they portray the characters and his family as well. His wife in the film is also a really great character, and it's just great. If you want something different and you want something just entertaining but also stating something about the world we live in right now, go and see No Other Choice. And then on the brighter side of things, and set in Japan this time, is Rental Family, which stars Brendan Fraser. And it's about him as an actor who is essentially employed by a company who sends him out to fill in for families' lives, essentially. So they might send him out to pretend to be someone's dad or pretend to be someone's husband.
Oh, man.
To get married to them. Because this is like an actual thing that they do in Japan. And it's directed by Hikari, who worked on the show Beef. And as far as I can tell, this looks to be just a really sincere, really deep exploration of kind of connection. I think Japan's a good setting for that, because in Japan's such a metropolis that I think there's been films before that kind of explore like how you can kind of lose connection in a capitalist society like that.
So this is based on a kind of like a real service that happens in Japan?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've definitely heard in my wanderings on the internet, I've heard situations like this before. You can like hire someone to be your friend for a day. So it is, it's a real thing. and kind of I think the film, what I'm really interested about the film, it looks to explore it very from a very tender angle and not kind of be like, oh, aren't these people weird for doing this, you know? So I'm really looking forward to that. We're showing that Tuesday the 17th of February at 7:30 and Thursday the 19th of February at 12:30. So
nice. Nick, what are you looking forward to?
So I did mention a little bit earlier in the beginning of the podcast that you should definitely watch a film called The Voice of Hindra Jab, and that's on Monday the 9th of Feb at 7:30. Just a quick, again, just it's about the sort of efforts of saving lives in Palestine via the Red Cross and other organisations that are, you know, just trying to help people out by getting them across border lines so they're not caught in crossfires. But it also just, it does have a feel of a bit of a documentary on it as well. It has like real footage from the situation that's unfolding and real audio as well, which makes it just a really like an emotional watch, very harrowing and like, and it's really effective. Like,
but kind of necessary.
Necessary is also, yeah, a word I'd use for it as well. And you know, just in the world of film, it's gaining a lot of attention. And it's just a really well-made film, worth a watch. But just watch it once.
Yeah.
You know, at least if you've seen it once, you'd be happy that you sort of saw it and knew about it, you know. And then later on in the month, we have, Lord of the Rings, celebrating 25 years of the Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh,
came
no
out
way.
25 years ago. So they re-releasing the trilogy. We have the first of the trilogy on the 28th of February at 12 o'clock, and then we'll be showing each one after that, the second in March and then the third in April. But of course, everyone knows Fellowship of the Ring and the trilogy itself is one of the greatest works of cinema, fantasy film in decades.
Amazing. Amazing.
And just the way it's made influenced so much how like blockbusters are pretty much made nowadays.
Exactly, yeah, definitely.
And the influences he had from back in the day too. It is great movies, great cast and great direction, action, choreography, and made the career of every single person. I mean, if they had a career such as like Ian McKellen, it was like a resurgence of
they are amazing.
Went into stratosphere.
I remember like when I very first saw like the first one, I think there's a bit where. And you see it loads now, but then I'd never seen it before. There's a bit where like the camera kind of goes into like the mountain where the orcs all are, and it kind of goes all the way through.
Yeah.
And then it goes kind of down this massive thing.
It's like a crane, dolly, like.
Yeah, to where someone's kind of like birthing an orc or something at the bottom. But it's like, as I say, now it wouldn't seem.
Like CG crowd replication with the first first 10 minutes of the movie, and it's just incredible.
It is amazing.
Something, if you have never seen it on the big screen, watch it on the big
screen. They're all amazing. There's a weird bit with trees which I don't like, but other than that, I can just about say the rest of it.
I like tree. Is it Treebeard? Is that his name?
The end
one.
What? Yeah, Treebeard, yeah, is the leader.
And walking around just like, oh, they're killing the trees, smashes.
Do they sort of carry the hobbits into that? yeah. Yeah, good stuff. I'm going to try and make that one. Sam?
So another like unconventional rom-com that we've got coming up is Harold and Maude, which is our film club choice this month. That is on Saturday the 21st of February. So we'll be having our usual discussion about the film afterwards. It's a really interesting film. It's a kind of somewhat of a romance unfolding between this young kind of nihilistic guy who keeps faking suicides to annoy his mum, and this older lady who's just kind of a crazy free spirit who just does a lot of insane antics.
Is it a comedy? I don't know much about it.
Kind of like comedy. Dark black comedy,
right?
But it is very funny. I saw it last year at open air cinema in Berlin, but it started pouring down with rain, so I kind of didn't have a full experience of that. So I'm looking forward to rewatching that, and we'll have a nice chat about that afterwards. And then in March, our film club is Metropolis, the silent classic, which I also haven't seen. So I need to watch that as well. But also in March, we need to actually confirm our listings, so can't guarantee what's coming back, but we are expecting to be showing Sinners, which just got nominated.
So such a good film. Yeah. Such a good film.
Yeah. Very, very exciting.
Yeah, me too. To watch.
What a film. And not like anything else. Do you know what I mean? Like when you watch it, you're like, what is this? This is nuts. So yeah, great film.
Yeah.
That perfect, like, taking influence from so many different directions that when you put it all together, it just feels really original and fresh.
And Michael B. Jordan as those twins, you're absolutely by the twins.
Yeah, yeah,
like, exactly. Playing twins can't be easy. I remember Tom Hardy did it in the Craze film.
Yeah.
And one of them was good and the other one was just not very good. But yeah, Michael B. Jordan, man, he's amazing.
It's very subtle. They've got like little mannerisms that are so distinctive. Yeah. Not like cringy or like, oh yeah, this guy talks with a crazy twang on his accent, even though they're from the same house.
Yeah.
Yes. And hopefully we're also going to be showing Send Help, the new Sam Raimi horror film, kind of back to his roots.
Yes. I'm a big Raimi fan. I love the Spider-Man films. I love the Evil Dead films. I love Drag Me to Hell as well, which I tried to watch the other day, but my Blu-ray was broke. But he's just great. Just kind of also slapstick horror almost he does, I think.
So this has given you an idea for a watch along, hasn't it, Roberto?
Well, yes it has. I think in honor of Sinners, which is a film about evil trying to get into a cabin of sorts, and Send Help as well. I do think have you guys seen Evil? Have any?
No, I've seen Evil Dead. Never seen it.
Well, nice. I think it's one of those, it's like kind of held up as like one of those horror franchises, but I think until you watch, you really don't realize how like unique and a character, how full of character that series is. Until you watch it. So yeah, I definitely recommend we watch those the first Evil Dead, and then, but they're quite short, so maybe Evil Dead 2. We'll say the first Evil Dead.
Yeah, we can watch first Evil Dead. And by the way, if you're listening at home and you have thoughts on Evil Dead, do drop us a line, neil.roger@mix926.com, or even better, because I am quite slack on the admin of checking that email, if you message the lads on the Odyssey Instagram, that's probably a good way to give us your views. We will try and include those as well, include you in our watch along. But yeah, we can do that. Evil Dead, and then next watch along. I'm a bit scared already. Also, Roberto and Sam, not an official watch along. I've got to insist you see Jerry Maguire. Nick, is it fair to say, I think it's not going to be a punishment. You're going to like it.
Yeah, I imagine I will. I will watch it as well. I have not watched it in the end time.
When is Digger supposed to release?
Probably not June. The end of the year.
Really?
Yeah, September on Povel. But we could just do
that. Could come a little
bit. Bonus.
Yeah, a little bonus, Jack. We'll just check if you liked it.
I'm sure Jerry Maguire will come into relevance in the next month or so. It's a
long way around the hell. Some. Yeah, because we got asked to watch it.
Is this an Easter film?
Perhaps. On their eggs?
Yeah, who you bet.
Right, chaps. That's it. Thank you so much, as always. Sorry, this one felt a bit hasty because of the terrible traffic here where we are in St Albans. It's impossible to get around. I think his name has come up earlier. I think we're going to try and say goodbye in the style of Matthew McConaughey.
Okay.
Oh, Sam, all right. Sam, that means you've got to go first. Okay. A brave okay means you've got to go first.
Oh, I don't even know how that's going to... Okay. All right. Thank you for listening to the Podyssey.
It's good. Roberto.
Okay, here we go. I've been listening to the Podyssey way longer than I was paid to. Which I think is a quote.
A worried looking Nick, let's have you, please.
Yeah, sure. Thank y'all for listening to the Podyssey. That sounds like more like a just a backcountry redneck guy, like from Deliverance.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Podyssey, guys.
I think the Podyssey will evolve, not revolve. Matthew McConaughey. All right.
Where's my daughter?
Right. Apologies to our American listeners who we are now. You're now our favourite listeners, by the way. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Loads to look out for at the best independent cinema on the planet. And we'll be back with you next month. Thanks for listening. Say goodbye, everyone.
Thank you.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at The Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at The Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.